somebody's got an angle and a reason why that they're telling you that. And the fact of the matter is, to drive from a place of fear as opposed to information on a vulnerable population is really shitty.
If you're an avid runner and looking for help to understand the science, simplify the complicated, and remove hurdles so that your next run is not only fun and fulfilling, but also fuels you with passion and purpose, then you're in the right place. RunnerClick presents The Passionate Runner with your host, me, Whitney Hines. Hi, and welcome to episode 2 of RunnerClick's The Passionate Runner podcast. I'm your host, Whitney Hines. I'm a lifelong runner, a certified running coach, and founder of themotherrunners.com, a resource for moms who run. And today's interview is with physical therapist Dr. Carrie Pagliano. I connected with Carrie over Instagram as she is an expert in women's health, specifically women's pelvic health. And I've interviewed her for my site on a bunch of topics related to running postpartum. And you're going to see that she is a wealth of knowledge, and she shares it in such a straightforward, practical, and often humorous way. So before we get to the interview, I want to tell you a little bit about Carrie. She's been a dynamic leader in the areas of women's and pelvic health for over 20 years. She is a double board certified clinical specialist in orthopedics and women's health. She served as past president for the executive board of the Academy of Pelvic Health Physical Therapy. She's an adjunct professor at Marymount University in Arlington, Virginia, and Lynchburg University. And she's also served as an instructor at my alma mater, Georgetown University. She sits on a lot of other boards, and she speaks internationally in areas of postpartum return to sport and integrative models of practice and pelvic physical therapy. Carrie is the founder of Carrie Pagliano Physical Therapy in Arlington, Virginia, and the Real Mom's Guide to Postpartum Digital Courses Series for moms and postpartum professionals. When Carrie is not kid wrangling or bringing pelvic health to the world, she is an avid runner, a yogi, and a CrossFitter. Today, we chat about the return to running after having a baby, how to do it, how not to do it, common misconceptions and mistakes, and the hope that no matter your diagnosis, you can still have a future in the sport.
If you're listening to this, then you know just how hard this running journey is when you go it alone. Loneliness, doubt, knowledge gaps, no peer support, fear of failure. Runners battle these struggles every day, and it can lead to poor performance, limited results, missed calls, and worse, quitting when things get tough. Introducing RunnerClick Pro, our private community for runners motivated by purpose, committed to constant improvement, willing to put in the work, and eager to help others along the way. And while your individual journey is unique, we can all benefit from coaching advice and guidance from expert moderators, accountability groups to keep you motivated, interactive tools, and exclusive perks from our growing list of partners. Best of all, it's a supportive community. RunnerClick Pro was created from day one to provide support, acceptance, privacy, and compassion. And as a RunnerClick Pro member, you have a safe place to ask questions, learn, and improve without fear of judgment or rejection. Learn more and sign up today at pro.runnerclick.com and use promo code PODCAST to get your first month free. That's pro.runnerclick.com, promo code PODCAST, and we'll see you at the starting line.
Here's my conversation with Dr. Carrie Pagliano. All right. And we are here with Dr. Carrie Pagliano. Carrie, I am so happy to have you on the show. Thank you so much for coming on. And a little behind the scenes info here. Carrie was very, very patient with me as I figured out some technical issues. And now we've just been chatting about our daughters and Instagram and everything. But now we're here to talk about, to really dive into your wealth of knowledge when it comes to postpartum running. So anyways, Carrie, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
First, I'd love to know a little bit more about you. Where do you live? Who do you live with? How old your kids are? And then we'll get into how you got into this line of work.
Yeah. So I live in Arlington, Virginia. I've been here 20 years now, which is kind of crazy. I'm a transplant from upstate New York, so I miss the snow a lot. That's the one thing I do miss, being down here. No, I thought I would come down here for a job, stay for a couple of years, met my husband. He's from here, so my in-laws are close, and we're still here. So I have a private practice here now that's 2 blocks from my house, which is a great commute. And then 2 blocks the other way is my kids' elementary school, and they're in third and fifth with COVID, it's kind of a blur what grades
I get that.
Yeah. And then we have our puppy, Abby. She's a border terrier that we got 2 weeks before lockdown, before COVID. And she has been my little saving grace, because I swear to God, she's the only one that listens to me in the house. So that's who I live with.
You know, I feel that way about our dogs too. Actually, they don't really listen to me, but I feel like they're the only ones that understand me.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
They're therapy dogs.
Definitely a therapy dog for sure.
All right. So you specialize in women's health related to physical therapy, and specifically pelvic health. So how did you find yourself in this line of work? Did you start out just thinking that you were going to be just all things physical therapy and you stumbled upon this, or how did it come about?
It's actually a really boring story. it's one of
okay.
those things that, no, a lot of people, it's funny, a lot of people get into pelvic health. And that's actually the origin of our national special interest group. Is a lot of women have gone into this type of PT because of issues that they had. And after they had babies and so on. And so for me, like in PT school, I thought I wanted to be a neuro PT. I thought I wanted to work with strokes and spinal cord injuries and things like that. I graduated in 1999, and that's about the time that managed care rolled in. And so the bottom sort of dropped out of the PT market. And so all my plans sort of went down the toilet, and I ended up going back to upstate New York to just lay low for a little bit because there were no jobs. And a job came up in Washington, D.C., working at a hospital in a pelvic health program. And I had no idea what that was. We'd maybe had like an hour or two lecture in PT school. I actually don't remember it. And so they hired me. I came down. They did all the training. And this, I moved down just a couple months before 9/11. So it was also a really strange time to move to the D.C. area.
That's when I moved to the D.C. area.
Oh, no kidding. So we overlapped. Yeah,
we did.
It was a very strange time, and to be in a bigger city. And at the time, I don't think I had any sense of where all this was going to go. I had a wonderful mentor. She's still a great friend of mine. And she had to put up with 23-year-old me that was basically, you know, I don't know that I even want to do this. Like, I was thinking about going to med school, the whole thing. And then sort of had a record scratch moment where I was like, wait a second, let's kind of back up. Because what I was doing in PT and PT, pelvic PT at the time, was basically if you have a postpartum patient, you have them do Kegels. And if you have a pelvic pain patient, they do dilators. And that's like, we didn't know mm-hmm. that much about what we were treating. And orthopedics was very similar. It was very kind of productivity based kind of things. And I was like, I don't want to do this. And so I sort of backed up, and I was like, I'm going to learn this right. Went back, got my doctorate while I was working. And I was seeing kind of pelvic health on this, like, separately from orthopedic patients. And so in my mind, I was like, well, this is, you know, it's still a little weird, because we would kind of just hold things in this little hole, so to speak. And then a couple years later, I started working at Georgetown University Hospital. And I was like, all right, I'm just going to do pelvic health, because that way I didn't have the productivity requirements. I could just have my space. I could do my thing. I could work with these clients. I'm like, wait a second. All this stuff is connected. And so all my background in sports and orthopedics, I was finding ways to kind of mesh with pelvic health and pain science. And, you know, we just started to kind of have a big evolution of how we looked at patients in a much more holistic way. And around that time, I'd had hip surgery. I guess it's been 15 years now, or almost 15. And so I was kind of navigating that, but then had my two kids while I was at Georgetown. My pregnancies, and at least my first pregnancy and my first delivery, did not go at all according to plan. And so what I kind of realized in all of this was that what I had been taught, what I had been kind of given to navigate some of these postpartum issues in this little kind of box, it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. And at that point, you're like, all right, well, I'm either a really crappy PT, or I'm broken, or we need to change something here, because I'm not going to handle this. Like, this is not how it's supposed to go. And so mm-hmm. had my daughter, and then, because I knew we were done at that point, really just tried to navigate, okay, I want to get back to running. I want to get stronger. got some training and sort of fell into weightlifting about 5 years ago. And for me, it all just kind of came to a head about the same time where I was like, okay, we need to shift the paradigm here. All the things that we were telling people not to do, we're like, okay, don't run, don't lift, don't do crunches, don't do planks, don't do this, don't do that. Well, then what are you left with? Nothing. And then you feel weak and sad and pathetic, but yet you're supposed to be this big, strong woman. Like, I needed to reconcile kind of how all this was going to work. And the narrative that we were trying to sell just wasn't cutting it. So it was a matter of, okay, put your big girl panties on and we need to do something different. And so it's always been a little bit of trial and error with myself, but also kind of changing how I think about things and being open to that. And fortunately, we've had some increases in postpartum research. We've had a lot of good education as far as return to sport, adding load and things like that. So it's all about just kind of taking everything that was around me and sort of mashing it up and see what we can come up with, which come to find out is what I'm really good at and what my brain does really well at. So it was all just good timing, but it did not start out that way at all. That was not the plan. I was just going to be a good PT and help people.
Well, I mean, you started working at a great time because so much has happened in the field of pelvic health and just the awareness. Yeah. I mean, even just since I became a mom seven and a half years ago, I mean, I think people are starting to learn that, like you said, it kind of conflicts. Like you're told not to run, not to lift, not to do all these things. But then you're also told at your 6 week checkup, like, hey, you're good to go. Do whatever it is that you want to do. And so that's kind of hard to reconcile as well. So let's kind of back up a little bit.
Yeah.
And talk about if you were to have a perfect pregnancy preparing you to be able to run postpartum and then be like a very studious postpartum runner, how would that look? Because obviously you cannot predict what kind of birth you're going to have, how your body's going to respond to the pregnancy and that birth. But if you were to do everything you could to make sure that you're able to return to running healthy, what could you do? What would you do?
That's kind of a catch-22 question because that scenario will never exist. And lots of times I'll say things because that's what I thought I could do. Like there's this misnomer that if you have a fit pregnancy, you'll have a fit postpartum. Yeah, well, I got to 19 weeks and could not run another step because it literally felt like my son was doing like an Irish jig on my bladder, even though I'd just emptied it like 30 seconds before. I'll answer this question in two ways. One is like the realistic way. And one is, okay, if things do go well, what would you do? Mm-hmm. So the realistic way is take what comes and know that you can't control all the things. Like I ended up with a ton of symphysis pubis issues, really had a tough time towards the end, was not able to run the whole time with my first, and frankly, didn't try with my second because I had a toddler. We can go in with the best laid plans, but be ready for things to change. And I think that's parenting 101. Like you cannot control all the variables. That's kind of like a first little lesson in that.
Running trains us for that as well.
Oh, girl. Yeah. I think though, if you are fortunate enough, and I think there's caveats with that too. Like I have moms that will run, you know, the entire pregnancy and, you know, towards the end, they slow it down, but they're still able to do a couple miles here and there and they feel really good. And then they're completely blown away when they start to try and run postpartum, you know, 6, 12, whatever weeks, and then they have pressure or leakage or things like that. And so what moms are always looking for is they're looking for that recipe. If I do A, it will promise B. And that equation doesn't exist. But what I can say is the more you know about what can happen, the more you can kind of make those decisions ahead of time. Like, hey, is this worth it? Is it not? So I got a DM, I think it was actually this morning. I get DMs all the time. And they're like, well, I know you can't, you know, diagnose me, but blah, blah, and they, you know, go on and it's a long DM. But this woman, she's like, you know, I did the readiness to run screen. I passed everything. I went out for my first run and things felt really weird, like a half a mile in. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, what would you do if you went out for a normal run and things felt really weird a half mile in? Like, are you going to continue to push through that? Or are you going to be like, let me stop for a second. Let me walk a little bit. Let me see how that goes. And I think that's also having this self-awareness to understand the role of mindset in all of this. the mindset that will suffer the most in pregnancy and postpartum is the mindset that this is going to happen come hell or high water. It is going to be my way or the highway. I did all the right things. Therefore, the more rigid that mindset is, and I get to say this because I laminated my birth plan, but my son did not, nor will he ever read. the more rigid you are, the more you resist, it persists. But the more flexible you are, the more aware you are, the more you're like, all right, whatever comes up, I'm ready for it. I think it's going to be more of a smooth transition, because then you can navigate those things. So the recommendation would be get somebody in your corner that you can at least have a conversation with, even if it's a DM, to be like, okay, was that supposed to feel weird? And let's be honest, that first run just feels weird, period.
Right, it does.
But that's when I'm like, hey, you know, data points here. One can be a fluke. 2, 3, 4, and it feels that way. That's no good. Or 2, 3, 4, and it feels fine. Okay, then we can progress a little bit. So everyone is always looking for the this step. And it's actually much more of a scientific method, sort of trial and error, like, okay, what's going to show up today? Because my hormones are different, or I slept one way last night, or I didn't sleep last night, or my nutrition is that. There's so many variables. And I think that's my primary recommendation, is be aware of those variables, that all of that can influence this. So that way, when something comes up, you can figure out, okay, you know what, today I'm not going to run, I'm going to walk, because we didn't sleep last night and I'm no less for doing that. I'm actually going to save myself a little bit. So I think that's the biggest thing. And then the next one would be, like, I think walking's incredibly underrated postpartum.
Oh, I totally agree. Postpartum and return to injury.
Yes!
I mean, it's like the closest thing you can do to running, really, and to prepare your body for the
impact. And for sanity purposes, and the fact that you can, you know, walk with a stroller and walk with a carrier. Like, there's so many different ways to do that. And for me, like, the just getting out of the house the first time, I'm like, oh my God. It's just this whole thing.
It is very anxiety inducing.
It's a lot.
So would your recommendation be for postpartum runners to see a pelvic floor specialist no matter what, or if they return to run after doing the readiness screen and after a couple runs still things feel weird?
Yeah, I mean, this is where sometimes I give an answer that people are surprised by. And I probably would have given you a different answer a few years ago. So my answer is not every mom needs to see a pelvic floor PT. And this is why. A couple years ago, we get these big mantras that pop through, you know, like common but not normal, or, you know, every woman should see a pelvic floor PT. And somebody reached out to me and they're like, well, what if you don't have access, either financially, geographically, whatever that looks like? Or what if you did go? And not everybody's created equal. What if you went, you did what you thought you were supposed to do, and you still didn't get it better? Does that mean that that's it? And I was like, huh, that's really interesting. And so for me, I've kind of broadened my thought process on this, because, you know, I grew up in a very rural area in upstate New York. It was 70 miles to the nearest, like, legit hospital that you probably wouldn't die at. You know, we didn't have the best resources, nor did we have internet at the time.
Yeah.
And I don't know if people have broadband or things like that, but, like, sometimes resources look like a free handout. Sometimes resources look like, you know, where it looks like I'm making a complete ass out of myself doing a stupid reel, but I'm trying to show you that these things kind of come up as symptoms. Like, that any sort of postpartum education that could come from a physio, that could come from a postpartum coach, trainer, you know, somebody that works with postpartum runners or running coach, those sorts of things. It has to look in a lot of different ways, because we all don't have the same access to the same resources. And so this was tricky a few years ago when I was president of our national association. Like, now I have a little bit more freedom to be like, you know what? It's great if you have access to it, but there's also other options too, that if you don't have access to it, doesn't mean that it's hopeless. Mm-hmm. And the other thing I've had to make comments about too, is you may have a pelvic floor PT that gets you started and you never get off the table. That doesn't mean your options are over. That means, okay, the next step is finding somebody who will get you up off the table, who actually knows something about running other than, hey, why don't you go try it and see how it goes, which is not the advice they should be giving you. There should be a very clear step-by-step, you're at this point, this is the next gradation, and so on. I think just that awareness of all the options that are out there and the fact that there's usually a next step to be able to go to, I think it's given women a little bit more space to breathe mm-hmm. and not feel like, oh my gosh, if I can't do that for whatever resource reason, that doesn't mean that I'm hopeless.
And I know there are now resources online, like, mm-hmm. well, I mean, you have your guide,
yeah.
ReCore, you can do those virtually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she has ReCore as well. Celeste yeah. Goodson has ReCore as well when you're pregnant. Yeah. So if you live in an area where you don't have a good pelvic floor PT, you can find those people. And you also offer services virtually as well, right?
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
Okay. So what are some signs that if you go out, you wait for 6 weeks or whatever, and your doctor says, hey, you're good to go, and you go out and you try it.
Yeah.
What are some do not pass go red flags yeah. that you should go back home?
Yeah. So quite honestly, it's the same flag that it is in pregnancy. And that's one of the things that I talk about when moms do come in for that pregnancy visit where they want to prevent all the things. And I was like, hey, you know, anything that's leaking, we got to pay attention. Mm-hmm. If we have any sort of pressure or heaviness in the pelvic region, we need to pay attention. Anything that we've got pain, we need to pay attention. That might be pubic symphysis or your pubic bone in the front. That might be actually pain at the perineum. It might be SI, like back pain, those sorts of things. I try and keep it as simple as I can because you can go down 17 million rabbit holes. But generally, if you notice that, the first thing to do is stop and pay attention to what you're doing and see if you can change it. And sometimes that's as simple as, you know, if you're walking down a hill and you're like, ooh, I've got some pressure, or you're running down a hill. What happens if you go on flat? Like, what happens if you go up a hill? Does it change? If you've got leakage, try and notice, you know, if it's when you're running, does it happen when you're walking a certain distance? Like, the more you can kind of understand the characteristics, I think that helps at least give you a direction to go in. But generally, it's leakage, pressure, or pain. Those are not things that should be occurring. Again, once, okay, that could be a fluke. But if it happens again, we need to dive in and figure out what that is. Because in most cases, we can impact it and improve it, if not, you know, make it go away completely. And the earlier you do that, the less complicated the variables are then, because your body doesn't have a chance to kind of try to accommodate it and make compensations for it.
So if you have those symptoms or feelings, you shouldn't just wait it out and give it a week and try it again. You should be proactive about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things. I will be the first to say that there's certain things that time is definitely on our side, but rest, it's a wonderful thing and there's a place for it. But most of the time, especially with postpartum stuff, if we put it in the right place for the right dosage, it can make the right improvement. But just here, let me just rest for a day or two and then try the exact same thing again, it's probably not going to make that much of a difference. Because again, it took you 9 months to get there. Things are usually getting weaker and depleting over that period of time. Resting a little bit more usually is not the solution at that point.
So is there, I guess it's impossible to say what the standard amount of time should be for return to run, because many people assume that it's 6 weeks. I know a study came out in the past couple of years that it's closer to 12 weeks, but there's just so many variables, right?
Yep, exactly.
That you can't come out and say that this is the standard time for you to wait.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. I was talking to Shefali Christopher. She's a researcher in this area. I was talking to her last week, and I think she's got a paper coming out soon, kind of expanding on the UK guidelines a little bit, because the UK guidelines came out and said, okay, well, 12 weeks. But I think we can all have a case for, you know, that pro athlete that, you know, they might be good to go because it's literally their day job, or somebody that maybe they had a lot of complications, the baby had issues and they weren't able to focus on things. There's just so many things to take in consideration. But what we do know is, again, 6 weeks, we're at like 75% soft tissue healing. 12 weeks, we're at about 100%. And so purely from that perspective, and I think most moms would say that by 12 weeks, they at least know, you can at least see the light a little bit. But no, I mean, and that's the thing too. Like, I've had clients go back to exercise sooner than 6 weeks. I've had clients go back to running at 6 weeks. I've had clients that I've held at 12 weeks and said, no, we're not there yet. I think that's probably one of the hardest things about speaking in mass to a lot of people, is there are a lot of variables, and I hate to say it depends, but that's going to be my answer 100% of the time because there's so many variables. But I don't look at that as a negative. I look at it as a positive because there's so many variables that changes the possibility that we could do something a little bit sooner. But at least now we have a way to assess it.
And that's important to remember too, if you ever find yourself falling into the comparison trap when you're looking at postpartum runners on Instagram who waited 2 weeks and they're running their first half marathon or something crazy like that. So like you said, that gives hope too, that if you are diagnosed with DR or you have issues with leaking or prolapse, that all those variables can change and work in your favor.
Totally.
So pretty much all the issues that we've talked about, there are ways to address them so that you can become a runner again.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's always the outliers. There's always those scenarios, but I think there's always something to work on. And, you know, let's go to worst case scenario. And it's somebody who, you know, maybe they're a surgical candidate right off the bat because of they've got hypermobility and like Ehlers-Danlos or something like that. And there's really not a lot we can do genetically. Even with that, I always tell people, I'm like, worst case scenario, if we're talking a surgical situation, you're always going to want to go in stronger. You're always going to want to go in more prepared so that you make sure that you protect the life of the surgery. So a lot of these surgeries, they have higher revision rates. And I don't know that there's any studies that look at, okay, well, what if you look at pressure management? What if you train impact? What if you do all those things? Because if you don't do that, you just do surgery and then send them right back after, and they've done nothing to kind of address some of these things. I think that's worth noting. So I always tell people, I'm like, worst case scenario, you're doing exactly what you need to do, no matter what, you know, no matter where we end up on this. So
if a runner is at home and they've waited and they feel like they're ready to run, I mean, can you tell if you're ready to run, or what's a good like litmus test for you?
It depends on if you have a toddler or not. Like, quite honestly, because let's just be honest, toddlers know that when you have a sibling, they're going to make you run across that stupid playground. And so that's just the fitness test at like 2 weeks postpartum, right?
That is so true.
I mean, there's areas that we know to kind of look at now. And, you know, we all need to be a bit stronger. I think most runners in general probably just need to be strong. This is, you know, pregnancy or postpartum or not. There's always room for that. But I think, you know, impact management, if you're one of the things I always have people look at is, you know, walking. If you're able to walk 30, 40 minutes pushing a stroller, if you're able to do that and you've got the baby in a carrier and you're at like 20 or 30 minutes and things are feeling good, at least we know from like an upright gravity sort of sense, you're probably going to be in a good place. Whereas let's say you can only, you know, walk 10 or 15 minutes pushing a stroller, I don't know that I would start, you know, running right away. You want to build that kind of tolerance and that capacity. And I always talk to like, your baby is essentially this beautiful progressive resistance because they're going to get bigger.
Right.
So you're always going to have a little bit more load and it's always going to get a little bit more squirmy too. So those I think are kind of the first things. And then I always recommend a run walk to start, even if you're like, oh no, I can do that. And I've had lots of conversations with women that are like, well, what about a couch to 5K? And I'm like, honestly, it just depends because, you know, if the increments that they jump are like 3 minute increments and you can't do 1 minute of running, you know, let's build this so it works for you. So find what the bare minimum is and then start to build on that. But then also take into context, like what you have to do that week. Is the baby teething and you didn't sleep, or are you having nursing problems and your nutrition is changing? Like there's just a lot of factors. But as far as like preparation goes, I think when you're generally into a regular feeding and sleeping schedule, you're able to walk that amount. Those are good kind of indicators, plus a readiness screen to say, all right, I think I might be ready to give this a shot.
And how does the progression then typically look like run to walk on flat surfaces? When can you introduce varying terrain or speed?
Yeah. So sometimes actually, sometimes women with prolapse symptoms, so heaviness or pressure, they actually feel more comfortable on uphills than they do on flat. Cause you almost have to do like a little incline into the hill. And that you'll kind of know, I think, a little bit better with the walking. Cause obviously if you run up, you probably have to come down at some point. But yeah, I mean, we're really fortunate here. I live on top of a hill, so it's up down no matter what, but we've got a lot of local high school tracks and stuff that can be really nice place to start because you don't have to think, you just need to get there and it's flat. You know what the distances are. It's easy to kind of gather data about what you're able to do and just see, okay, well, I did, you know, I walked for a lap and then I ran for a lap and then I walked for a lap and then I ran for a lap. And it's kind of easy and mindless to do. Mm-hmm. So that can be one of the first things to sort of play around with. And then again, I usually will have people do the same workout 2 to 4 times, probably more like 3 to 4, to make sure that we're good to go and it's not a fluke, which is a little bit different than I think return after injury. Like, again, because there's so many variables, I want to make sure that we're spot on before we make a leap ahead. And the worst case scenario is you're just building a nice big solid foundation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are, though, a lot of parallels between return to run after injury definitely. And then after baby. Okay. So on your Instagram, which everybody needs to go check out, because your reels are awesome and funny and so informative and so clever. But you say that you're a truth teller and a myth buster, which you totally are. So I want to talk about the common myths when it comes to running postpartum. What are some of the most popular that just drive you crazy, that you just really want to set the record straight?
So just to fill in the gap. So for 2.5 years now, I've been doing Mythbuster Monday on Instagram, and I get a new one every week.
From your work, or how do they come about?
Oh, you hear stuff. Uh-huh. You hear stuff from friends, clients, and now it's gotten to the point where people they want to tell you because they want you to write the post.
And you're like, I will gladly do that for you.
Oh, girl. Like the newest one, and just trying to get to the bottom of it, that mom jeans and high-waisted leggings make your prolapse symptoms worse. And I was like, what? Why? Yeah. Oh, you haven't seen this. The algorithm hasn't gotten to you. No. And I tried to talk to a couple of people that did the post. And I said, you know, you're kind of fear-mongering there because this isn't a fact for everybody. I don't want to not validate your experience, but this is not a fact. There's no data towards this. And I have a lot of patients asking me about it. And they're like, this isn't fear mongering. Just reach. And I'm like, oh my God.
They just want to eradicate the world of mom jeans. It's what this is about.
You know, don't take away my leggings. That's like my COVID like happy place.
I discovered leggings when I was pregnant. And I was like, now I understand why everybody loves leggings. They're amazing. Yes, you feel like you're not wearing anything, but you are.
Exactly. Pretty much anytime anybody says don't, that's where I'm like, all right, there's something in there that we need to uncover. And usually that's when you start to dive in. Like, and that's why I always say, like, the answer should be yes. And it shouldn't be no, don't do this, unless literally you're going to risk your death. I mean, the other common ones that come up, don't do planks, don't do sit-ups, only run in barefoot shoes, things like that, that there's just no data to support, but somebody got it in their head. And that, you know, if you go back and look at where some of these things come, I mean, it's very similar to what we see in running. I mean, like, what was that book that came out about the Tara Mahara? And everybody's just
born to run.
Right. And yet we're all in Hokas now. So it's like,
and on clouds, like very, very supportive shoes.
Exactly. And so I think, you know, it's kind of like red wine too. You're like, one day red wine's going to cure you and the next day it's going to kill you. Like, you kind of have to go back and somebody's going to angle in a reason why that they're telling you that. And the fact of the matter is, to drive from a place of fear as opposed to information on a vulnerable population is really shitty. Like, it's not okay. And as a professional, and I think this is a really interesting point identity-wise for my profession, and pelvic peas are starting to do a really nice job of this. Like, a lot of people were taking over that postpartum space that like would take like a weekend course and like, oh, hey, you can do this now, you can do that, you know, whatever. And we were like hiding behind our licenses. We're like, we're medical professionals. We're not allowed to say anything without yes, we can. Mm-hmm. We have an opinion. We're allowed to share it. And I think that's honestly been a blessing of COVID, is that you've got more medical professionals in general just talking about things in a way that it's educational. It's not prescriptive. It's not diagnostic, but like, people that legitimately know this as their day job are where you're hearing your information from, not some person that they were Insta famous and now they had a baby and now they're telling you exactly how they did it. And for 1995, you can do it too, you know? Mm-hmm. That's honestly where the Mythbusters came from. And I'm a nice person. I'm a little sarcastic. I need to be entertained when I'm educated.
Well, you do such a great job. I mean, honestly, you're very brave about it. Like you said, you're not hiding behind your medical license. You're not afraid to say what the truth is.
That took
is.
A while. I've been out 22 years.
I have to say, like, you have a post about the anatomy of a queef. I mean, that is brave for you to put that out there, you know?
Well, probably is more brave is that my parents read all my stuff.
Right. I know. I was working on an article yesterday about how to make sure you poop before your marathon. And as I'm writing it, I'm like, my dad and my husband are going to be reading this.
Fortunately, my parents have a very good sense of humor. My dad was an English teacher for 35 years. And that's where I get all my writing kind of stuff from. And probably some of my sense of humor, but probably not in this sector. We didn't talk about
that would be that a little stuff. Strange.
Yeah, a little strange. And so I always would joke. I'm like, well, my parents, think, that the cervical I treat is like the neck as opposed to like, down there. Or my mom thinks I treat sprained ankles. Like it's been nice that honestly, that they do get to see what I am doing. And because it's not the easiest conversation to be like, hey, this is my day job. Right. Look what you raised. But that all the things that they hope for me to be able to do and whatever in my life, I'm still able to do that. Like I'm able to use my voice as a platform. I'm able to hopefully impact people that wouldn't necessarily have been otherwise and just kind of use my words to be able to empower some people that may need it. So I think in that respect, things that you don't plan it to turn out that way, but I don't think they're completely ashamed.
Well, I mean, I know for a fact that you're helping so many women every day.
Oh gosh, I hope so.
I've referred you to a lot of people who have messaged me about leakage is something I get a lot of questions about.
Yeah.
So if someone is experiencing leaking while running, what advice do you have for them?
Yeah. Usually it's not the answer that people want. The answer is I want you to go back and run again. And I ask about a million and one questions about it because there's so many different facets to leakage. Is it the beginning of your run? Is it later in your run? Is it on a hill? Like, does it matter? All the variables we were kind of talking about before, you cannot treat somebody the same that has leakage. They just went to the bathroom and they've been out running for 30 seconds and they've got leakage. You cannot treat them exactly the same as you do somebody that they're 7 miles in and they're starting to have a leak. Those are two completely different etiologies.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really a disservice when we're like, oh, I just treat leakage. Well, we've got to talk about, what kind that is. If it's later on, it's probably more endurance. If it's early on, are you emptying completely? What's kind of happening at that beginning of the run? I have some clients that like, they've got to run downhill right off the bat. There's so many kind of qualities and nuances. And I think when I started to realize how important those little details were to find patterns. And when you can find patterns, then you can find these similarities to treat them in a similar way. But if you're treating everything the same way, you're not going to get the results. And so for me, when I started to kind of shift direction, and part of that was my own experience, I was having stuff all over the place and finally started to track some things and come to find out a lot of the stuff that I was dealing with was hormonal and it was cyclic. But if you don't jot that down, and I try and keep things very simple, like how little do you need to do so that no one dies kind of stuff, like red, yellow, green, and how did it go today? Mm-hmm. And that's when I started to finally realize like, oh, hey, that's when my cycle starts. That's when I'm symptomatic. But afterwards, I'm not. But unless you know to look for those things and find those patterns, it makes it's so frustrating.
And I know that you've also talked about people assume that any pelvic floor issue that they're having is because the pelvic floor is weak from carrying a baby for 9 months. But that's not necessarily the case. Sometimes it's overactive and the magic pill is not Kegels or Kegels.
Yeah.
How do you say it? Kegels or Kegels?
That one's however you
tomato,
want it.
Tomato, tomato. Like okay. Way, so. I'm good with Kegels. It's not Kegels. And so
Yeah.
I believe that you have, do you have screening available to figure out potentially what, where the problem lies?
Yep. And I think with that one, the one that I get a lot, and you're kind of in that, that age group too, it, where our kids are maybe a little bit older and they're like, oh, I wish I'd known that. Yeah. Well, guess what? We didn't know this five, six, 7 years ago. And that's why I try and let people know too, when you start to guilt trip yourself, because Lord knows we do enough of that. Like so much of this stuff, we weren't having these conversations because we didn't have moms that were running and winning Olympic races or, you know, New York City marathons, or, you know, we didn't have role models that were doing these things. So we had this subset of people that were starting to do it. And then we kind of had to figure it out as we go. Like, I got into CrossFit because I was starting to see women who were lifting heavy weights and leaking, and I needed to understand what was going on. That was only like 2013.
Right.
You know? And so I think that's the thing to remember in all of this too. Like, we're going to know far more 5 years from now than we do right now. All the answers aren't there. And so if you're frustrated because you're not finding answers, that's kind of how I felt. And that was literally my day job. So the, we're getting to know a little bit more each day. I see that overactivity conversation now, that's becoming much more kind of normal in my circles. Like, but there's still PTs that don't, all over the world, that don't acknowledge that overactivity may be a driver in postpartum issues. And I dare say, and I saw it a ton in the pandemic, I dare say that more often than not, issues with leakage and symptoms with prolapse are related to overactivity, because these muscles are on. And we ask them to give us more when we have increased pressure and they don't have any more to give. And then you end up with more symptoms. Throw in a, you know, almost 2 year pandemic where moms are in fight or flight, like 24/7, you know, it's just all those little things that start to help you realize like, oh wow, it's not just, I had a vaginal delivery and I'm weak and I need to do Kegels. It's like, okay, I had a painful delivery. Things still hurt down there. My muscles are trying to protect. Oh, and my baby's not nursing. Oh, and it's a pandemic and I have no help. Like, you add all these things up and you build this story that supports overactivity versus underactivity. And again, when I started kind of doing that and laying everything out and trying to figure out, okay, what's going to support my hypothesis the most, that's how I was able to help women, you know, over 18 months doing telehealth during COVID, is because you put that together, you have a good sound case for what you're doing, and you have a great place to start to kind of address that.
Well, that makes perfect sense. And it just, yeah, I mean, it's just crazy to think, because back when I, with my first pregnancy, everything I was told was just, hey, if you're sitting at a stoplight, do your Kegels, you know, anytime you find yourself sitting with nothing else to do, do your Kegels. I remember sitting in meetings and doing Kegels.
I know. Think of all the women that were guilt tripped because they didn't do them. And then think of all the women that were guilt tripped when they did them and they didn't work and they thought it was their fault, when actually that wasn't what they should be doing anyway.
Right. Exactly. You're just potentially making the problem worse, right?
Because you're exactly. Exactly.
So what are some common mistakes that you see postpartum runners making?
I think that probably the first one is just to go back too soon. It kind of goes on two basic mindsets. You have the runner that's like, if I don't get out there, someone's going to die. And they just keep pushing through. So they'll experience symptoms and keep pushing through them. I think that's one of the hardest things, because you want to keep them out there running for their sanity, but you also need to back them up so that they're not just training their body that, hey, this is something that we just push through, and and not giving them different strategies. So with that particular mindset, that one's probably the hardest. I think the next is just starting, because how many women have intentions to start and do all the right stuff, and they kind of can do it while they're on maternity leave, and then they start back to work, and then it kind of goes in the toilet, and all the, you know, the strength training and whatever things that they were focusing on go in the toilet, and they're like, but they just want to get out for a run, and they go and they blow it out on like a Saturday or Sunday or something like that. And then they think, oh my gosh, I messed up everything. And then they don't start. And then two kids later, they're like, oh, well, now I want to start, but I also weigh more. I also am not sleeping. My nutrition isn't great. Like, there's all these combinations of that. So it really kind of goes with that mindset of, I want to do the right thing, but I don't have a plan. And that's where I think habit building is so important. I talk about this a lot with my clients, is like, we need to have a solid plan that you don't have to waste any brain cells on. We take a little bit of time, you plan it out, and you have a A solution and a B solution if something doesn't work out, because we know it's not gonna. And then we know how to move forward. And then the other is, if you're overshooting and not paying attention, we need to figure out a way to pull it back, but allow you to still keep doing something so that you keep the sanity piece. And those are exceptionally difficult challenges on both ends, but you can navigate them. But usually they're hard to DIY.
Well, I love that you are a PT that understands the importance of exercise for sanity. I mean, even when you're exhausted as a new mom, just being able to find something that you can do to make you feel good about yourself is just so important. So I love that you recognize that, because I know you've lived it.
Yeah.
Well, I am so happy that you were able to come on the show and talk about all things postpartum running with me. Is there anything that we didn't talk about that you wanted to talk about?
Oh, gosh. No, I mean, I think that's all the big stuff. I mean, it's one of those things that I think getting back to running sounds so simple because you just walk out the door and do it. But it's something that can be incredibly complex. But it doesn't necessarily have to be if you kind of can see it or collaborate or work together with somebody that's used to doing that. And it's hard to DIY it if you're having trouble and having issues. And that's why I think the more that we can kind of have these conversations about all the resources that are out there. And that's why I love, you know, collaborating with people like you and running coaches. Like, there's a million and one ways to skin this cat to get back. There's not, we just have to find what that right way is for you. And if a reel can inspire that, if a post can inspire that, if a blog, if anything can inspire that and help you feel empowered, I think that's the most important part, because there's so many women that are trying to get back to running or lifting or, you know, HIIT training, like whatever, whoever they identified with before having kids. Mm-hmm. I think it's so important to kind of find that identity and kind of find who you are physically postpartum. And so running for so many women is that. And I think the more we can kind of help women find that path, the better. So.
Oh, 100%. I'm so glad that there are people like you out there that recognize that. So we've talked a lot about your Instagram. So can you tell people where they can find you on Instagram and your website and any place else?
Yeah, I kept it super easy. So my Instagram is just at Carrie Pagliano. And you can find all my freebies. Website stuff is carriepagliano.com.
Awesome. Carrie, thank you so much. And we'll chat with you later.
Thanks.
Bye. Thank you, Carrie. Thanks for listening to the Passionate Runner podcast. Full show notes for each episode, which includes a summary, key takeaways, quotes, and any resources mentioned, are available at runnerclick.com/podcast. Be sure to follow and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you're enjoying the content and getting value from these episodes, please leave a rating and review at ratethispodcast.com/thepassionaterunner. We'll be sure to read these out in future episodes. Thanks again for listening.